The opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference. The opposite of art is not ugliness, it's indifference. The opposite of faith is not heresy, it's indifference. And the opposite of life is not death, it's indifference. And this week's opening quote comes from Eli Weisel. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. Recently, you have probably heard me talking quite a bit about history, quite a bit about the lost nation of Tartaria, a nation that existed in Europe that nobody seems to know about. It's a nation that's been expunged from history, and yet it still exists on many maps. Well, it still exists on many old maps anyway. It doesn't exist on too many new maps, but you can still find it on old maps if you search for it, and it does appear to be quite a well-known and well-established nation. Of course, any academic sources that you question about this nation, they will simply tell you it was an area of land, it was never actually a nation, and yet, as I've also pointed out previously, we can find flags of this nation. And if it was just an area and not a nation, then it wouldn't have a flag. So it was, in fact, a nation and not simply an area of land, and there's every indication that it had also spread out to become a worldwide civilization. This is very much suggested by the similar architecture in so many countries around the world, very old architecture, which is all very much the same. And this is what is termed Greco-Roman architecture. But one would ask, why would every country around the world be building their government buildings using the same architecture? You find this everywhere. You find it all through the Americas. You find it through South America. You find it even in Japan and Australia. So why would they be using the same style? That's the question. And even not just the architecture, but the symbolism, the motifs, the designs, even the clothing, the styles of clothing that people wear, these are all very similar all around the world. They may not seem that way when you first look at them on the surface, but when you really analyze things, you find that they all have a common root, which very much suggests that all of these nations, all of these cultures were all connected. And no matter how you look at it, this is very much what is indicated, ladies and gentlemen, and also through the discovery of a worldwide language, which was Magyar, or the root language of Hungarian, which was spoken by the Incas, by the Polynesians, and also by all the Australian Aboriginals, and many cultures all around the world seem to have spoken this language. Polynesians, Melanesians, all of the island cultures seem to have spoken it. In fact, Magyar seems to have been so common around the world that one might question if one were to apply Magyar translations to some of the lost languages that we still can't figure out, such as the Rondo and things like this, perhaps we could find that there is a way of translating them if we use Magyar. Who knows? It's just a thought. And something else you've heard me talking about a great deal is the evidence suggesting a worldwide mud flood that happened as recently as 150 to 200 years ago. As I've mentioned before, there's a Russian channel run by a man called Philip Druzhinin who is covering this quite extensively, and I do recommend you go and look at the research that he's done on this because it is quite compelling, and you'll find that there is evidence of this mud flood that exists everywhere. I mean, it did happen, folks, and it was a physical flood, but it was not water, and it was an event that covered virtually the entire world. We can find evidence of this flood across Europe, across the Americas, even here in Australia. And evidence of this flood appears as buildings that have a sub-level, a level below ground, and also as many of the buildings that look like they were carved into rock faces, look like they were carved into cliffs. There's a very real possibility that they weren't carved into the cliffs, but simply the cliffs flowed over them, or perhaps the cliffs even became molten around them. But however it happened and however it manifested, suffice to say there is a good deal of evidence to indicate that the mud flood is a very, very genuine event, and it's very likely that it occurred in the mid to late 1840s. And there's a lot of people who have been putting a lot of research into this, and a lot of information is being uncovered about what has truly happened in the past. And our history appears to be very, very different to what the mainstream has taught us, to what we've learned in academic institutions, what we learned in schools. In fact, none of what we are taught in schools of what our history is backed up by physical evidence. All the physical evidence says something quite different. And there may be some people that would debate that. They'd say, well, no, we've got a lot of physical evidence to support the official timeline. But really, when you look at the physical evidence, you can construct any story you want to make it sort of fit with the evidence. But you have to leave a great deal of it out, which is why there's so many great mysteries and anomalous objects and all the names they think up for all the things they can't explain. You know, and ultimately, folks, if there's one artifact that is out of place, then the official version is wrong. And there are literally hundreds of artifacts that are out of place, if the official version is to be believed at all. And again, these are all sort of listed as anomalous objects and great mysteries and all shrouded in secrecy and presented as something that we just don't know how they did it. But really, if you can face the very real possibility that they don't fit because the timeline and the history that we're given is completely wrong, then you begin to see a little bit of the bigger picture. And it is wrong, folks. Our history is wrong. I have no qualms in saying that. It's completely wrong. Most of it has been completely fabricated, and I would suggest that it's been done absolutely deliberately for a very specific reason. The question is, how did they do it? How did they erase history so effectively? And what really happened? Well, what evidence suggests really happened is, as I said, this mud flood. There was a flood that's gone across the entire world. And the mud flood, because it is mud, it's not water, it appears to have come from the land itself. The question is, how did that occur? Was it a natural occurrence, or was it simply done by somebody or something? And the other question is, of course, why can no one remember this? How has it been so effectively expunged from human memory and expunged from our history? But as I've said before, how long would it take to change history and hide history? And effectively, it would take three generations, but you could actually do it in one if you were to remove the older people. Well, most of the older people anyway, a high percentage of the population, just wipe them out and simply replace them with children. The children wouldn't know what history was, especially if they were children that have just been put in place after some sort of a cataclysm like a mud flood. And these children would believe any history that they were taught. I mean, they wouldn't even have an interest in history to begin with. You'd put them in place, set them to work, and they'd be too caught up in the rigors of everyday survival to ever even question where they come from or what they're doing there. I mean, for a child, it'd just be the way things are. They would gradually grow up over generations, and you would just teach these new generations this new history. And when you look at the stories of old, the stories of the chimney sweeps and how so many children were working back in the old days, and we just thought it was terrible that there was child labor and that's the way they did it, but why was there so many children working? Why weren't the adults there to do the jobs that the children were doing? There's been a lot of photos that have been surfacing lately, a lot of old pictures, and you can go and find them yourself. If you look at any historical photos from around circa 1850, look at St. Petersburg, look at some of the major cities in the United States, major cities in England, major cities right across Europe around circa 1850, and you'll find very, very few people in the photographs. You see these big cities, but there's just no people around. Why is that? And another thing you can find, something that I found on a channel the other day, which is another channel that I've just found, which I really do recommend people go and look at. It's a channel called Conspiracies Are Us, and it's a very small channel. It's only got about 2,700 subscribers or something, and I cannot imagine why, because he's doing some very, very good dot connecting, and he does deserve more views. But what I saw on this channel was a video that he'd done. If you're watching this on YouTube, I'll put a link below in the description. And it's about 21 minutes long, but it was a video discussing foundlings and orphan trains in the late 1800s. And a foundling is a child which is abandoned and is found and cared for by someone else, or perhaps taken on to an orphanage or even an asylum, because there were many places that were set up and they were called asylums, and these were simply for people to care for children and for unmarried mothers to go and have their babies as well. And any woman who had a child out of wedlock, circa 1850, was required by law to hand their baby over to a foundling home. And around circa 1860 to 1880, there were literally thousands, tens of thousands of foundlings which were being dropped off at orphanages all across the world, right across Europe, right across Russia, right across America, even here in Australia, New Zealand, and Africa. It was about 200,000 children per annum were shipped from east to west across the United States. And this is what was happening in so-called orphan trains. And they just used to be shipped out there, and all the kids would get off the train, and people would get up there and pick the children that they wanted, and then the train would be reloaded, and they'd move on to the next town, and they'd pick the children that they wanted. All the children were picked to use for labour. And it didn't matter if the children were related or anything, they were often separated, and they were simply given whatever last name the people thought they should have, given whatever first name and last name, kind of by lot. So there's no way of tracing the genealogy of these kids. Like if a brother got separated from a sister or siblings got separated at all, if they went to another town, they were given another name and then they grew up and there would be no way they would be able to locate their siblings. So all of them were just completely thrown into a new life. And this was happening all around the world, and there were major enterprises in place set up to manage these children, to care for these children, to ship them all around the place. There's reports of certain cities in Italy, for example, that had up to 1,200 foundling homes in the cities just to accept the influx of foundlings that were coming into the areas. The question is, why? Where are all these children coming from? There's one place, or two places, I think, had 45,000 children delivered to them in 1 year. There's reports of, like I said, 200,000 per annum being shipped across the United States. There's reports of around about 100,000 per annum being shipped out of England to Australia, New Zealand, and Africa. There's reports of children being shipped into major cities in Russia and then being sent out to rural areas, which is very strange because if the children were being found in rural areas and then being brought back to major cities in Russia, why were they then shipping them back out to rural areas? And the question is, if these cities are empty and there was very, very few people around, which is very much what is indicated by the photographs that you see, then where were all these children coming from? And again, there's every indication that all of these children were put to work. I mean, that's what is there in the documentation. All of these kids that were shipped everywhere all around the world were all put to work. So again, the question is, where were the adults? Why weren't the adults doing the work? And why exactly would so much labour be needed? Yeah, in a normal society, in a normal world, if things have gone along the timeline that we're told, and there's just families going out and colonising new areas, you know, the settlers going out building their log cabins and having children, why would you need this huge influx of child labour to be sent so many places around the world? It's a very interesting question, ladies and gentlemen, and the question also must be asked, were the children brought into these countries and into these places as labour for the clean-up operation after the mud flood? Because there's a great deal of evidence to suggest this is what actually happened. And many of the stories about colonisation and all of this sort of stuff are very likely cover stories to hide the fact that these children were being shipped all around the world, and the stories of the foundlings even, of these foundling homes and these vast orphanages and all these things they needed, this is very likely a cover story as well, to explain the presence of all of these children. The question is, where were the children coming from? And really, when you look at this, folks, the figures are astronomical. They really are. And as I said, I'll put the link below, if you're watching this on YouTube, I'll put a link below to the video discussing the foundlings and the orphan trains. And if you're not watching this on YouTube, you can simply go to my website, thecrowhouse.com, and you'll find the video is currently embedded on my homepage and will stay there for a couple of weeks. But I think it's extremely interesting, the volume of children that were being shipped around the world and the evidence that exists all around the world to indicate that there was a civilization prior to this one not too long ago, and this current civilization simply moved in and took over the real estate. And when I say real estate, what I mean is not just the real estate, but also many of the buildings. And as I've said before, folks, really when you look at our cities, there's no way these cities were built by us. Some of the architecture is just too old. Some of the architecture is just too complicated by our standards. How do we ever do any of this stuff? I mean, we certainly can't do it today. And some of the architecture here in Australia, it's not possible for the settlers to have built this. They simply wouldn't have had the machinery to be able to quarry the stones to build these huge government buildings, which are very old buildings. We've got buildings here that have been here since the late 1700s, and yet this country is supposed to have been colonized in 1770. And yet by 1778, we've got cities. By the early 1800s, we've got huge cities, and it's just not possible for these cities to have been built in that time. And evidence would suggest that they weren't built in that time. They were already here. We just simply cleaned them up and moved in and took over the real estate. And of course, when you consider that, then you've got to ask the question, well, what happened to all the people that were in the cities before we came and did the cleanup? You know, what happened to everything, folks? What happened to all the technology? You know, some of the technology that exists in these old buildings, and a lot of them, as I've said before, some of the buildings like churches and some of these very, very complex structures you see around the place, they don't really look like buildings. They look like they're machines. They look like they're energy gathering machines. And I think all buildings were designed to actually gather energy. I think free energy was a reality. I think free energy was part of everyday life. And I think that a lot of these structures were designed with that in mind. And they were designed to harvest energy from the surrounding field. Now, I know it sounds a little outrageous, but there's every indication this is what was going on. Have you looked at some of the old fireplaces in some of the very old buildings? They don't seem very conducive to burning actual fires in there. Some of them are extremely shallow and don't appear to have chimneys attached to them. And there's no grating, no sort of place to actually build the fire. Very strange looking fireplaces. They seem to be connected to a metal type of device, some sort of a metal railing that runs around them. And there's always these two items, like two urns or two little spires that sit at the front of the fireplace. And there's always a metal plate at the back. And perhaps these two metal objects at the front combined in perhaps some sort of positive negative energy field and projected some sort of a beam onto the metal plate at the back or some sort of energy onto the plate. And the plate itself was what heated up and heated the room. I've been getting a lot of people sending me information out of Russia, which has been really good, so keep that up. And there's also a Russian website that has noticed this and is suggesting that this is a possibility as well. And a lot of these old fireplaces, they've got these setups, folks, and they really don't look very conducive to burning wood. And again, you look at the copper tops of a lot of these buildings and these devices that are all constructed on top of them, you've really got to wonder why they're there. Are they just there for decoration, or is there a higher function to some of these things? There's a building in Florida called the Ponce de Leon Hotel, which has got a very interesting device on top of it. And it looks like it's just some decorative thing. But when you look at the building, this device, it's very unusually shaped and it's made of metal. And it's quite an intricate little device as well. And it's not exactly in a position where people are going to be viewing it. So what's it doing there? And why go to all the trouble to make something so incredibly decorative and to put it up in the center of the roof? And this is quite a big hotel. This is a 540-room hotel. What's it doing with this metal device on the roof? And if it's just there for decorative purposes, why do they make it out of metal? You know, it's very obviously different to the rest of the building. The question is, what's it doing there? Is it just a decoration, or is it actually performing some sort of function? And I would very much suggest that it is performing some sort of function and that free energy was a reality back in the middle of the last century and is very much still a reality today. It's just that the technology has been hidden from us. And really looking at all this, folks, looking at these foundlings and this whole information about the mud flood that's come out, all the information that's been surfacing lately, it really causes me to question everything. Question everything that I thought I knew about history. And I've spent a lot of time in my life looking into history. It's always been a fascination for me because of all these artifacts lying all over the world, all this weird stuff lying everywhere. You kind of find out about it when you're young and you want to know where it all comes from and what really happened. You know, but all you've got to go on, I mean, all I had to go on for many years was books from academia, books from libraries. I mean, you could go to places and see things. But then you try to research, and all you've really got to go on is local legends and what the books tell you. But there's so much more information surfacing now, and the whole idea of these foundlings, these massive amounts of children being shipped all around the world and being used to run cleanup operations after the mud flood, you've really got to question this, folks. You've really got to look at what happened and where our civilizations came from. And like I said, it causes me to question everything. All of the wars, all of the formation of society as we know it that we've been given anyway. The Napoleonic Wars, World War I, World War II, all of these things, I question all of them now. I don't think any of them have been fought under the pretext that we've been told. I think all of them are actually all related and are all part of the destruction of this ancient culture, this ancient civilization. And I think it's still ongoing. I think that the war in Syria, the destruction of Aleppo, the war in Yemen, this is all about destroying the infrastructure, destroying the buildings, destroying every trace of the past, any trace of anything that would suggest the existence of Tartaria, of Atlantis, of this lost culture, this lost civilization. It helps me understand the feeling I had when I was a child, why I was so appalled and so disoriented by the fact that people had to pay to be alive and we had to buy land. Why I felt quite literally that some terrible mistake had been made and I'd been born into the wrong reality. It makes me question where my mother really came from. My mother and her four sisters, five daughters that were just suddenly in Tasmania living out on this property. How did they get there? Were they really born there? My mother remembers her mother was very young and died very early, and she had quite a strict father who married another young woman. But I really begin to question all of it. I really begin to question what my roots are, what my family ties are, what my family tree really is. Because really when you begin to look at the bigger picture of all this, folks, you begin to see that the war for Tartaria was the major battle of this earth, and it's still ongoing. It would appear that Hitler attempted to make a last stand for Tartaria. This is why he was using the swastika. And the swastika is a very ancient symbol, folks. A great video that was actually put out by New Earth the other day, where she went through the use of the swastika in Western cultures. You find that the swastika was very much used in America, was used in Australia, was used everywhere. It's a very powerful, very potent symbol and a very positive symbol. And suddenly it was turned around and presented to the world as being this hateful symbol of fascism. And what are we giving our attention to now? Things like peace signs. And what's the peace sign? The peace sign is the Druidic death rune. And here's us worrying about all these wars, giving all our attention to this peace sign and wondering why so many people are dying when we're sitting here worshipping the death rune. Yeah, this sort of stuff is what's been done to us, folks. The swastika is actually a very positive symbol from the past, representing abundance and giving and all sorts of good things. You've got to wonder why it's been vilified. Well, I guess not. You can understand why it's been vilified so dramatically and so effectively, why everybody now sees it as a symbol of fascism and a symbol of hate when really it's a symbol of freedom. And no, I don't think Hitler was a great guy, and I don't think that we should all become Nazis. I mean, this isn't what it's all about, folks, but I don't even believe the stories of the Nazis, and I certainly don't believe the stories of the Holocaust at all, because there's no evidence to support it, and I don't care what anybody thinks about me saying that. The thing is, ladies and gentlemen, as I said, I now question absolutely everything. Everything that I thought I knew about history, about how we got here, and about where we're going, and about how things are really being run. Even with the mud flood, folks, I would suggest the mud flood was done via frequency, done via creating a type of an earthquake scenario. You know, when you have an earthquake, when you're in an earthquake, what happens is the shaking causes the soil beneath you to liquefy. And that's what causes the buildings to drop. I mean, they start shaking because their foundations are unstable because the ground below them has turned to liquid. This is what I felt when I was in Mexico last year. There was quite a big earthquake in Acapulco when I was there, about 7.2 or something. And I was on the ground floor of the Princess Palace Resort, and the entire ground of the hotel felt like we were floating, felt like we were sailing on the ocean because the whole hotel was floating on the liquid soil beneath it. And that's what happens. And if you could liquefy soil in a certain way so that the ground either flowed down from the mountains over the villages or the villages simply sank into the ground, this would be how you could destroy a lot of the population quite quickly. Perhaps you could do it by setting up something like a 5G system, by setting up a whole electromagnetic grid, getting everybody dependent on all this technology and making them carry the technology with them everywhere, and then you could just fry them all whenever you want to, flood the whole place by changing the frequency, flood the whole place with mud, and let the domestic pets do the rest. The dogs would clean up all the mess on the streets. Could be why we're all encouraged to have dogs as pets in cities, folks. I mean, once they run out of food and start running in packs, the dogs would have a field day. You wouldn't even have hardly even any bones lying around the cities left. The dogs would take care of all of that, so that could be a good reason, folks. But looking at all this, I think they are preparing to do it again, pretty soon. I really do. I think we are heading for a new reset or whatever you want to call it. But I think they are probably deciding that this population is waking up a little bit too much and that it's time to pull the plug on them. And I think that is very much on the cards, folks. I would suggest that is why they are rolling this whole 5G system out. And also things like, as I mentioned a few times before, someone I was speaking to, an engineer that I was speaking to a couple of years ago who builds bridges and buildings, and he's always built bridges with a 100-year lifespan, but now he's been instructed that the new bridges they're building only need to be constructed with a 15-year lifespan. And that was 2 years ago. So I think we're heading for another reset, folks. I think they're going to do it again. I think they've done it several times before. And as I said, I think history is very different. When I look at this and I really take in the fact that this architecture exists all around the world, really look at the mud flood and really let the concept of these tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of foundlings being shipped all around the world really sink in, I begin to question everything. Like I said, I begin to question the slave trade, what really happened with the slave trade, how these people were moved around. I question how the white people got everywhere. Were the white people the emissaries of Tartaria? Because it wasn't just black people who were being enslaved. It was everybody who was being enslaved. And not only that, it was mainly children who were being enslaved and sent out as workers all around the world. So who set this whole thing up? Who set it up to have all these races hating each other and fighting against each other and arguing about their past and things that happened in the past, none of which they can be actually sure of occurring at all? Because all we've got is this false history we've been fed. Nothing that we're fed makes any sense at all. Quite literally everything that we're told about, pretty well everything, has been a lie, ladies and gentlemen. I know that's a really difficult thing for people to come to terms with. A lot of people don't have time to investigate it anyway because they're too busy running on the treadmill. And a lot of people are just too indifferent to the past. A lot of people don't think history is important because they're too concerned about what's going to happen tomorrow. But folks, I think we have reached break time. So I'll leave it there for now and we're going to have a break. Thank you for joining me on the air today. And I'll be back to speak to you again in a few minutes. And welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, so it's people's indifference to history that has really allowed this cover-up and hiding of this lost civilization that existed so recently, and the hiding of Tartaria and Atlantis and even the mud flood and all of this stuff to be so effectively removed from human memory. And of course, this indifference has been programmed into people. Many people are indifferent without even knowing that they're being that way. And this removal of our history from the collective consciousness is really an integral part of the control grid, because really, that's what it's all about, is control. And just returning to the opening quote for a few minutes, indifference and apathy truly are two of the biggest problems we face in the world today, and two of the things that have allowed the system to reach the point of control that it's come to. The issue being that people in the modern world don't really involve themselves in their lives apart from going out and working and collecting their slave dollars. Most people put more of a focus on their virtual lives than on their real lives. They're more interested in getting likes on Snapchat or Instagram, getting followers on Facebook, than on paying attention to what is happening in the world around them, because that's just all boring news. You don't want to watch the TV, it's just all depressing, and we don't want to hear about wars and all that stuff. Not part of my reality. And that's the way people kind of get through it and don't find themselves overpowered by all the negativity that we see in the world today. It's kind of like some sort of inbuilt defense mechanism that people have. Some sort of means of self-preservation and the only way they're able to deal with the insanity. But even in that, it's really important that people involve themselves in their lives, and it's very important that people involve themselves in the world. As once said by Plato, the price men pay for indifference to public affairs is to be ruled by evil men, and that is certainly apparent in the world today. There is far too much indifference in the world today. A lot of it, I would think, is coming from the rise of the technological world that we're seeing around us, the rise of this digital dystopia where everybody's locked into their smartphones and no one's really paying attention too much to what's going on around them. this really does create a kind of indifference by default in people because they're always too busy doing other things. And it really is one of the main obstacles that we need to overcome as a species if we're ever going to get ourselves out of this mess that we're in. And even looking at that, one of the most interesting things about it is the fact that what people are so busy doing most of the time is nothing. Because the other things that people are doing most of the time is, in fact, staring at their smartphones, doing nothing. All they're doing is getting mental input, mental stimulation, but they're not actually doing anything except staring at this little device in their hand. I mean, they may be using their thumbs, but they're not interacting with the world. They're interacting with the virtual world, which is a world made up of zeros and ones and no actual physical content and, for all intents and purposes, does not actually exist. And another really fascinating thing about the virtual world is that what you see in the virtual world are essentially simulations of that which exists in the real world. And the more realistic the simulations are, the more people enjoy the virtual world. And yet while they're doing that, they're missing out on the real world around them because they're locked into this little device in their hands. And all of the stuff they're looking at doesn't exist. They're missing out on existence for looking at a nicer digital version of that existence, which doesn't actually exist. It's very, very bizarre when you think about it. And of course, the reason people are so locked into this world is because of the dopamine addiction that they are suffering because of the way these devices have been set up. You know, every time you click an icon, every time you do something on your smartphone, every time you click something, every time you get a like, all of these things release dopamine into your body. And we have a society that is now suffering from mass dopamine addiction, most especially among the youth of today. And it's true, folks, it's what causes this addiction to technology. And for the most part, people are caught up in a situation where they're measuring their life and their whole existence by the amount of pleasure they're able to receive at any given moment, which renders them into a state of indifference towards the real world around them. And to me, I mean, I don't know, I just find it a weird thing, this fascination people have with the tech. And often when I say this sort of stuff, people say, yeah, but here we are watching this stuff on our smartphones. Max, if we threw away our smartphones, we'd never get to watch your show. And I just don't understand this because I do the shows and I watch all these other shows, but I don't have a smartphone. I do it all on my computer at home. That's the thing, you know, you've got all the stuff at home to be able to do this, and you can still do all the things that you are doing online now by doing it on your computer. I mean, all I'm suggesting is that when you go out into the real world, you leave the tech behind and you go out and actually experience the real world and experience real people as themselves, not people that are sitting there staring at these screens. I mean, you don't need to take the virtual world out with you into the real world. You can leave the virtual world at home and participate in the real world. That would make a huge difference if people were to do that. Because all you're doing really is you're taking this surveillance device and this tracking device with you everywhere, and people are often forgetting their life skills or even forgetting how to find their way around their own towns without a GPS. It's ridiculous. And that's the problem, folks, is that people are taking the tech with them everywhere they go, and they're using the tech to involve themselves in real-world activities, such as shopping at supermarkets and checking into hotels and all of this sort of stuff that they're using their tech for when they never used to. You used to just sign forms and go and pay cash and do all this sort of stuff, and you could still do that. And of course, people say, well, this is the way they do it. If I didn't take my smart device, I wouldn't be able to use these places. Well, fine, don't use them. Go somewhere else. If you stop doing that, if you stop using them, then they'll stop using the tech because they won't have a choice. The only reason that they're all changing it all over to digital is because people carry their smartphones around with them everywhere and they let their smartphones run their lives for them. As I said, you know, they just become indifferent to everything. Click a few buttons and the job's done. Click a few buttons and you find your way here. Click a few buttons and this happens and that happens. You don't have to think for yourself. The phone does it all for you. I mean, really, it's about a loss of life skills and it's about control and ultimately it's about surveillance. And this is how it's done, folks, and this is why the control grid is able to perpetuate the way it does, is why it's able to continue, because people simply don't notice it because they're too distracted doing other things. But like I said, the other things they're doing are virtually nothing. And the real world is going through some drastic changes around them. Indeed, it's gone through some drastic changes already. We've certainly seen some changes in California this year. My heart really does go out to the people in California who are suffering the fires as well. Notice how every fire they've had in California in the last 2 years has been the worst fire in California's history, and it just keeps getting worse and worse, and it's all part and parcel with the same thing, folks. Very coincidentally, of course, the location of all of the fires that we've seen in California in the last 2 years just happened to all follow the path of the new high-speed train that they want to put in between San Francisco and Los Angeles, all of which is being run by Senator Feinstein's husband, billion-dollar contract, set to make a lot of money on that one, folks. And these are very interesting fires. Again, the fires we saw in Malibu are a particular type of forest fire which turns houses into uniform piles of white ash, but somehow seems to not burn the forest or the trees. This is all active denial. This is all directed energy weapons, ladies and gentlemen, and it's simply a taste of what is to come. And looking even deeper at this control grid, looking deeper at the 5G grid, you've got to ask yourself whether what is really being set up is not a kill grid, because it could well be used for that. And you think about it, folks, if they've flooded the world, if they've done all this stuff, brought all these children, all these foundlings, created this whole new culture, this whole new society, they built it up to a certain point, and if they needed to wipe the people out, well, this would be a perfect way to do it. You get people enslaved to this monetary system, which limits their potential, causes a barrier to be erected between them and reality, a barrier of scarcity whereby they've got to collect paper in order to pay to be alive. Gradually lead them into this digital system, lead it to a point where they've got to carry this device around with them in order to perform everyday functions. This device gives you the ability to be able to track everybody, locate anybody at any given time, record any conversation everybody's having, literally surveil every aspect of everybody's lives. And if you really needed to, if the situation got to a point where you were found out, you could simply switch the whole system over to active denial and fry them. Now, this whole 5G grid they're setting up, the electromagnetic system they're setting up, you've got to wonder exactly what can be done with this. I mean, we know it's going to be used for communication. We know they can target individuals specifically for active denial. But what else can they do with it? Could it somehow be hooked up with HAARP? Could it somehow be hooked up to send out a pulse to cause an earthquake? Could it somehow be used as a means to create an electromagnetic pulse that would liquefy the soil and create a mud flood? I mean, did they do this last time? Who knows how they did it, folks, but there is certainly a lot more to this 5G grid than meets the eye. And as I've been pointing out, there's also certainly a lot more to history than meets the eye. You know, I'm of the opinion that all of the wars that we hear about that were fought in the past, as I've said before, I think they were all fought contemporaneously. The Napoleonic War, the War of Genghis Khan, the War of Troy. All of these wars were actually the war for Tartaria. And the colonization that we see around the world, the colonization of Australia, the American War of Independence, and possibly even continuing on to the American Civil War, which happened generally over that same 100 to 200 year period. All of these wars, I would suggest, are cover stories to hide the overthrow of the Tartarian civilization. And I think that it's still ongoing. We're doing it now. All the wars that are being fought now are to continue to wipe out the last traces of this civilization. And the police that we have here and these legal systems that we have here, this is just a prison system, folks, and all the police are prison guards. Even the fact that you can't defend yourself. I mean, if you escalate the level and if you do this and if you do that. Here in Australia, if you defend yourself in any way without calling the police, you've committed a crime. How does that work? You know, the police will tell you that if you pick up a stick to defend yourself against a man, well, you've escalated the conflict, therefore you have just become the aggressor. But what if the guy that is attacking you is three times the size of you? Some steroid android fruitcake who's coming and monstering you, and you are not able to pick up anything to defend yourself. You have to call the police. And if you call the police will say, well, no crime's actually been committed yet, so you need to call us after the crime's been committed. So in other words, let him kill you and then call us after he's killed you and we'll go and arrest him. That's how it works in this country. This sort of stuff is absurd, folks. And it's all done to disempower people, to take people's sense of self-worth away, to make people incapable of defending themselves and turn them into easy targets for the system. And the system knows exactly what it's doing, folks, and I would also suggest that the system is in possession of technology that we do not know about. Technology they've always had. I think the technology we're using now is technology that they have always had. It's always been there. It's reversed to the type of technology we should be using. We should be using free energy, ethereal type of technology, all of the stuff which did exist and continued to exist up until about the mid-1800s, and not the sort of technology we're using now, but we're being set up. And you've got to wonder how it's done, whether it's an earthly thing, whether the whole earth is a machine that they use to do this. And who they are is another good question. Another interesting thing that I've seen on another channel is a report about how the oceans are receding. There's a lot of places around the world that are drying up. The oceans are not rising, as we've been told, you know, global warming, melting of the ice caps, the raising of the water levels, all this sort of stuff. Well, it actually appears to be going the other way. Ocean levels appear to be declining all around the world. And not just some places around the world, but there's reports coming from virtually all over the world. And again, in looking at this information, try to put your beliefs of whether you believe the Earth is flat or a globe aside and just look at the information. Doesn't matter what the shape is, okay? We're talking about oceans here, not shape. Because the guy doing the research uses the word globe, there's no point in attacking him if you believe something else. There's a bigger picture. Focus. One person has even suggested that the oceans are leaking through the crust into the Earth, and that perhaps there's a lower ocean that exists below this ocean, another ocean that exists beneath the surface of the Earth. And sometimes that may bubble up and cause floods. Maybe it recedes before it does that, the way a tidal wave goes. Maybe it's all part of the whole mud flood technology. Maybe it's done electromagnetically. Maybe they drain the water out to do something else with it. Who knows? But it's very interesting that we are seeing so many earth changes and so few people are noticing them. They really are. Not a lot of people are looking at this. Too many people are arguing about the shape of the construct. And I really think that the whole idea of the mud flood and this reset and everything that they are doing is far more important than attempting to discern the shape of the prison that we are in. I really do, folks. We really need to see the urgency of the situation that we're facing. We need to put down all of our stuff with each other. We need to stop fighting. We need to withdraw support from this system and turn and face the control mechanism head on. We really do. Because the only way to get out of this mess, folks, is to return to nature. The only way to get out of this mess is to put down the tech. If people aren't prepared to put down the tech, then we're not going to get anywhere. We're really not. You know, the whole thing has been a setup, and if you can really step back and look at the bigger picture, it becomes pretty obvious how it's all been done. Even leading us into the cryptocurrencies and stuff. I mean, cryptos could work in a sane world, in a normal world, if everything that we've got here, if this whole society had actually progressed the way we believe it did, and the technology had gone through its natural evolution the way we think it did, and it all led us to this point where we've now got these independent currencies, crypto could work really well. But you've got to be concerned about the term crypto. The cryptocurrency, the type of currency you take to the grave with you, the type of currency they introduce just before there's another reset. You know, they burn all the knowledge, they digitize all the information, then they introduce the Kindle reader for you to read it. So they're starting the fire, then Kindle reader kind of disappears into the wayside and you start using Amazon Fire. So they're really burning the information. And then we get rid of all our real currency and we turn it into cryptocurrency, the type of currency we take to the crypt with us. And they do like to tell us what they're doing with all these words and titles that they put on things. So you've got to wonder exactly where we're being led, ladies and gentlemen. And for my part, I'm not really wondering that much anymore. I think I can see pretty clearly where we're being led. And I've been out of sea for quite a while, and I've been attempting to alert people to the fact that we are in a state of clear and present danger. And I think it's important that people do pay attention to this. I really do, folks. I mean, I come onto these shows and I tend to be really cool and calm and polite and eloquent and just give you the information in a way that you can comprehend it, in a way that hopefully will empower you. But, you know, I cannot stress the urgency enough. we really are in a state of urgency and we really do need to put down all of this squabbling and we need to step back and look at the bigger picture of how we are being set up and where this is ultimately going to lead to if we don't put down all of our stuff, agree to disagree on whatever issue it is that we believe and turn and face this problem, turn and face this system and withdraw support from it by giving support to each other. It's imperative that we do this, ladies and gentlemen. It really is. You know, we are being set up, and we have been set up, and it's been such an effective setup that you really have to wonder if we can ever make it out. But I think we can. You know, I can see a light at the end of the tunnel if we would simply pull support from the system. But if we don't pull support from the system, if we agree to blame each other and blame each race and blame each other's belief system and attack anybody who doesn't agree with our belief system, then we're never going to get anywhere. You know, divide and conquer is the motto, and it is used in every single aspect of our lives. It is used every single day, but it doesn't work if we don't go along with it. Now, if we agree to live our lives in Lakesh, and we agree to disagree on these small issues and realize that what has really happened here is that we have had all the information taken from us so that nobody knows what's going on. And that's why we can fight all day about what we believe and not actually get anywhere, not prove anything, because all we're doing is taking a stance and barking at the people around us to comply with our belief system. And even if they all do comply with our belief system, let's say if everybody in the world suddenly believed the earth is flat, now what? What does it do? What does it achieve? Will you sit there and wait for God to come? Does it mean God exists and now we have to do the right thing? I mean, this is so ridiculous. It's so far from reality. You know, if people need to believe the earth is a certain shape to feel close to God, what is wrong with these people? Honestly. You know, nothing will change if we do not stop complying with the system, and that will not happen until we can understand what the system is. And the system is this smart grid, it's the tech, it's the cities that we're living in, it's all of this technology that we're using, which is so completely opposite to the technology that we had and to the technology that we should be using. I know there's going to be a whole bunch of flat earthers out there who take that completely the wrong way and think I'm attacking flat earth because they just didn't listen. And there's going to be a whole bunch of globe earthers out there who think that because I'm not attacking the flat earthers, I'm supporting the flat earth and they just didn't listen. It's the same as if I even suggest that the white people come from Tartaria and that we're being exterminated for a reason. All of this multiculturalism is being brought into white countries to wipe out any trace of this past civilization. And if I even suggest that, then I'm called a racist for doing so. And people cannot see that they've been set up to think this way. You know, the whole slavery system, the whole slavery history that we're given, I even question that, folks. I really do. I think there's a group of parasites that have put this whole system in place and they've played everybody off against each other, and it's time we put it all down. It all happened in the past, and really when you look at everything that I brought you on the show today, look at the mud flood, look at the foundlings, look at the history, look at the fact that our timeline has been changed, all the stuff that I brought you for so many years on this show, when you really bring it into account and take it into account that you don't know what happened because you don't know what our history is because we've been lied to on every single count, then what is there to feel animosity towards other races about? What is there to hate anybody for? Why would we even blame anybody? Why would we blame the white people for the slavery? Why would we blame any particular race for doing any particular wrong thing when it wasn't the races? It wasn't any race who did anything. It was the psychopaths who run the world, who set the whole system up and who played us all off against each other and who took everything we had from us. Who brought our ancestors into these countries as children, as slave children, and they worked them to clean up the murder that they had just committed. And we have evolved from that. And we've come to these cities and we've taken them over and turned them into what they are today, thinking that we built it all ourselves, but we didn't. We were put here, and we were put here to do exactly what we're doing now, and we've been set up. The whole thing has been a setup. And I think it's important that people consider this. And I know my words have probably offended a lot of people, but I don't care, folks. I'm sick of people being offended by what I say. I'm sick of people taking things the wrong way. I'm sick of people cherry-picking what I say and taking one sentence and misconstruing it and using it out of context and throwing it back at me. I'm sick of it. If you can't hear what I'm saying, if you don't want to listen to the entire radio show and put it all in context and hear that this is a man speaking from his heart, trying to help this species wake up to themselves, then I don't know what else to do. I really don't. You know, I do what I can. We all do what we can. I'm not some agent. I'm not some devil. I'm not some demon. I'm just a normal person trying to make a difference the same as everybody else. And you can attack me for my belief systems all you like, but the reality is, folks, that I don't have a belief system. Belief is the enemy of knowledge. And even everything that I've said on the show today, I'm willing to accept the fact that all of it may be completely wrong if I find out something else. You know, I'm quite happy to put it all aside. I'm quite happy to change my opinion on everything tomorrow if more information comes along. And that's just the way I am. This is the quest for knowledge, folks, and ultimately it's a quest for freedom. Because without that, without freedom, there's no point in even being here. There's no point in even being here. And if that isn't the quest of these radio shows, then there's no point in even doing them. Well, we're getting very close to that time again, folks, where it is now the end of the show. Sorry I didn't bring you any radio shows for the last 2 weeks. And if you're wondering why you haven't heard from me much, I've actually been virtually offline for the last 3 weeks. I've been virtually without internet. I actually almost didn't even get to bring you this show again this week. I mean, I almost didn't have any type of connection at all. And it's just been an absolute nightmare, to be honest. And that's why some of the editing might be a little bit askew on this show and some of the imagery may be a little bit out, because I simply haven't had time to collect the sort of stuff that I really wanted to show you or put the time or effort into the show that I really wanted to do. I've been spending too much time on hold from phone companies, and we've just had so many problems here with internet connections and cables failing and all sorts of stuff going wrong, so I just haven't been able to even get online to answer emails or show up at appointments or interviews or any of the stuff that I've been wanting to do in the last 3 weeks. I've just kind of had to put everything on hold, and I do apologize for any inconvenience, but I'll try to get back to being a little bit more regular now that I've got a connection again. I guess that's one of the problems that you have by not having a smartphone, folks. If you only use a home internet connection, they can get you that way as well by messing with that connection. Because if I had a smartphone, of course, I could have just got online on my phone at any time, couldn't I? But then I don't have one, so that's just not how it works out for me. But it's, again, you know, it's what they do. They just want to push you into this and make it too inconvenient for you not to have one of these devices. So that's worth paying attention to. You know, they wouldn't be doing this because they really want you to have the tech and they really want you to have all these conveniences. They're doing it because they want you to have the device on you, and there's a reason for that. But anyway, folks, we have pretty well reached the end of the show. Thank you to all the people who send me so many kind emails. Again, I will be speaking at Anacapulco this year in February. That's February 14 to February 17. I'm also doing a gig in Coffs Harbour in January. I think the date is January 18, but I will check up on that for you. But it is a speaking event in Coffs Harbour. The name of the event is Illuminate, and I know that is just going to cause so much flack. I wish organisers of these events would think about the titles that they name them, because I know the conspiracy theorists will have a field day with an event called Illuminate, because if it's named Illuminate, oh my God, it must be the Illuminati. It couldn't possibly be just some random person who likes the name and just decided it would be a good thing to use for the event. No, no, it must be the Illuminati. This is what I hear from everybody, folks. But all I'm really caring about is that it's an event in Coffs Harbour in Australia, and I actually get to speak to some Australian people and deliver the message to them. So I'm going to go and do the event anyway. And I'll put a link to it on my website sometime in the next couple of days, but it's around about mid-January, and I do urge you to come along to that. It's going to be limited seats, I think, folks, probably only about 120 to 150 people, so you might want to get in early. But that's in January 2019 in Coffs Harbour, New South Wales. I'll be doing another smaller event in Byron Bay the following day, but that is going to be very limited attendance because it's part of a larger workshop, but I'll keep you posted on that one as well. And again, I'm speaking at Anacapulco in Mexico in February. That's February 14th to February 17th. And these are the only talks that I'm going to be doing in 2019. I really want to put travel on hold, put some effort into the films in 2019, put some effort into my health, and just generally get myself back on track, because I seem to be suffering a little bit of self-neglect at the moment, and I think it's time that I paid attention. No good trying to do this and trying to save the world if I'm killing myself in the process, folks. So perhaps I need to get a little bit of focus and include myself in the picture of things that need curing and things that need healing, not just the world, but also me. But anyway, folks, as I said, that is it for me. I've now completely reached the end of the show. Many thanks to all. Many thanks to my Patreon supporters. Again, I could never do any of this if it wasn't for you. I will look forward to speaking to everybody again next week. Please take very good care until then. In Lakesh.